My next guest has probably played more characters named Reza and Amir than anybody in the last 10 years. He's also played characters whose names on IMDb are listed as nothing more than Moroccan proprietor or terrorist number two, which is why he's written a book called I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, Memoirs of a Middle Eastern Funny Man. Maz Jobrani, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Thanks for having me. That's the best intro I've had in a long time. I like that. Played the most Reza and Amir than any other person. That's a claim to fame, baby.
When you walk in for a casting session, do you know ahead of time what it's going to be? Or do you sometimes walk in there and see the script go, oh, not again?
Well, no, usually when you get an audition, you know what the character is going to be. That, you know, you have to prepare for the audition, so they send you the materials in advance. The thing I say is, as an actor of Middle Eastern descent, I was born in Iran, I grew up in America, and as an actor of Middle Eastern descent, early on in your career, when you go out for parts, they tend to be parts for bad guys, terrorists, and that's kind of what the book, one of the chapters of the book is about, of me doing playing a terrorist in a Chuck Norris movie of the week. So you kind of got to pay your dues, and then finally I said no more of these. So I stopped doing those terrorist parts.
Was it when Chuck Norris kicked your butt that you said, okay, I'm done with this?
Yeah, it actually was before that. You know what happened? What was funny was, first of all, I always say if you're an actor of Middle Eastern descent in a Chuck Norris movie of the week, you know you're going to die. So I knew it was coming. It was more the issue I had was I was playing an Afghan terrorist who'd come to America to blow up a building in Chicago, and this was before 9/11. And I thought, okay, at least what I'll try to do is portray through my acting why this guy is doing what he's doing. I'm going to be a good thespian and do my work.
Yep.
And when I went to the wardrobe fitting, they said, here's your shirt, here's your pants, here's your turban. And I quickly told them, you know, Afghans in America don't wear turbans. Indian Sikhs wear turbans. Let's get it right. And the girl was like, dude, this is a Chuck Norris movie. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and then I actually argued with her. I said, listen, do me a favor. Tell the producers that I've done my research. I really shouldn't wear a turban. And so she goes, okay, I'll talk to them. And then the next day I come to my dressing room. There's my shirt. There's my pants. And there was a scarf. And I said, see, I told you if you'll talk to them, they'll change their minds. I will gladly be the scarf-wearing terrorist. And she goes, that's not a scarf. That's the turban. You just got to wrap it back up again. And I feel like an idiot.
Yeah. Well, I want the paycheck, so okay, I'll wrap this up on my head.
Exactly. You know, it was early in my career. I had a day job in an advertising agency. I was an assistant, so I basically wanted what every American wants, which was to quit my day job, and so I did it. I did that, and then I said no more terrorist parts. And then the TV show 24 came, and they said we have a terrorist part. I said no, thank you. And then they go, but he changes his mind halfway through the mission. I was like, ooh. The ambivalent terrorist. Okay, that's interesting. I could try that. So I did that, and that was the last time I played a terrorist part. That was like over 10 years ago.
I'm curious, even outside of the acting, as a Middle Eastern American, as a Persian, because you came here about 1978 or so you've been an American longer than you were actually an Iranian, spending time there. I'm curious if when you wake up in the morning and you see a story like the plane crash in the Alps a couple of weeks ago, if you say to yourself, please don't be Muslim, please don't be Muslim, please don't be Muslim.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that happens all the time. I mean, I'm always waiting for that shoe to drop, and I'm going, what's this guy's name? I hope it's not, like you were saying, I hope it's not Reza or Amir or Majumdar or something, and I hope it's Joe or Paul or Frank.
Yeah.
You know, and the interesting thing is, you know, as a stand-up comedian, I look at these things, and it is interesting to me. For example, I feel like any time a Middle Easterner or a Muslim does something, it feels like that people, all the people from that part of the world, start getting profiled, start getting questioned.
Yep.
Whereas if it's just the regular guy, you know, just white guy, it doesn't happen that way, and it's just one crazy white guy. And I talk about that in one of my stand-up bits. I talked about how this actually happened. I was actually in Austin, Texas one time, and I was driving out of town, and I turned on the news, and they said someone has flown a plane into the IRS building. And I was like, oh no, this was in Austin, Texas. And then it turned out it was just this white guy who was frustrated with the IRS.
Yep.
And they basically sold it as, you know, he's a crazy white guy. And then a little while later, I was at Times Square, doing shows at Caroline's, on Broadway. And there was news that came out. There was a Pakistani guy who was trying to blow up a car bomb in Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the problem is the Pakistani Taliban came out and actually took credit for the failed car bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why would you take credit for a failed car bombing? Like,
yeah.
Why would you call a press conference and be like, we just want to say we tried, you know, and, you know, furthermore, it's a thought that counts, you know, sometimes win some, lose some. But the problem is then all the people from that part of the world start getting profiled, whereas in the other situation, it doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. Whenever I hear about an incident where somebody has been successful in killing a lot of people, there's always a law enforcement authority. If the person was white, that comes out and says, look, this was not terrorism. We don't think there's any connection to terrorism. And what they really mean is the guy wasn't Muslim.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Because I think, you know, we live in a time that's very sensitive to these things. And I think, obviously, there's going to be a lot of racism. Unfortunately, the problem with racism is that most racists are not that intelligent. And so you end up with an incident happening where one individual, which they're also, you have to kind of be, you know, to be a terrorist, you're not fully sane in the mind. You're basically a criminal.
Yep.
And so a terrorist goes out and does something, and then you get racist, you get some crazy racist on the other end who goes out and shoots an Indian Sikh. It has nothing to do with Muslims or Arabs or any of that, but the guy just goes out and shoots someone wearing a turban. And
yep.
So you go, wait a minute, like this is just stupidity following stupidity, you know?
I mentioned that you came to America from Iran in 1978, which would be, as the Iranian Revolution was forming, and of course we had the hostage thing that started in 1979. When you came to America, you were, what, 8, 9 years old, something like that?
Yeah, I came in late 78. I was 6 years old. I was just a kid, and it's interesting because we were in Iran. The revolution was just starting to happen, and a lot of people from Iran didn't realize that the revolution was actually going to be successful. So my father was on business in New York City, and he sent for my mother to bring me and my sister to stay with him while he was there on business, basically during our winter break from school. So I always say, and we left my baby brother back in Iran, and I always say we packed for 2 weeks, and we stayed for 35 years. Yeah.
What was your childhood view of America?
Well, you know, it's again, I talk about this in the book, but it's very interesting. In Iran, my childhood was very influenced by Western by Western culture. In that, you know, as you know, America, we export our culture very well.
Yep.
And so, as a kid in Iran, I had Spider-Man comic books, Batman comic books. I was a big fan of Muhammad Ali. I loved Zorro. Just all this stuff. I saw the movie Rocky as a kid. So there was a lot of influence, American influence in my childhood in Iran. And then when I came to America as a six-year-old, at the beginning, I had no idea. Obviously, I'm 6 years old. I have no idea what's going on politically.
Yep.
And here I am in New York. My father was actually well off at the time. He ended up losing most of his money later in bad investments. But when we first came to America, he had, you know, he was doing well. So we were at the Plaza Hotel in New York City across the street from FAO Schwartz. So you can imagine a six-year-old comes to America and he's right across the street from the best toy store in the world.
Yeah, this is even better than I dreamed.
Yeah, I'm like, this revolution is really working out for me, you know. And it was all nice and fun until the hostage thing happened. And then the next thing I know, I got older kids picking on me, claiming that I'm a hostage taker and what have you. Yeah, back then they would call you an effing Iranian.
Yep.
So I get kicked on for being a hostage taker. And again, the stupidity of racism is that these kids didn't think for a minute that I had left Iran to get away from the same regime that took the hostages. So if anything, I'm on your side.
Right.
But, you know, but they don't think like that.
And so then when your parents picked up and settled with you in the San Francisco area, was assimilation easier then, or did it have to take time and get past the whole hostage thing?
Well, that's a great question too. It's, the, For us, it wasn't just a hostage thing. It was an immigrant thing. And I think if you look at any immigrant story, you'll see that I always say this. And I always ask kids who have parents that immigrated to America, and I ask them, I go, did you experience what I experienced, which is you don't only have to help them with the language, you have to help them with the culture. So we had a lot of things that, aside from the whole hostage thing, culturally, like, for example, my father, we grew up in Northern California, a county called Marin County. It's a very affluent county, but the people there are a lot more subtle about their wealth. So if you're rich in Marin County, usually you'll drive a Saab or a Volvo. And here comes my dad from Iran, and he chooses to buy a Rolls Royce. And so I'm this little kid trying to blend in, and things go well at school all day until your dad comes to pick up in a Rolls Royce, and you're like, "Ah, Dad!" And then the kids, you know, then the kids bug you about owning an oil well and being a Saudi sheikh and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of cultural stuff that I had to go through with my parents and kind of lay low with them.
Yeah. Well, thanks for helping out with that, Dad. We appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. He kept blowing my cover every time and the other thing is they were, again, I think this is true of a lot of immigrant cultures. They were very loud and they would always, for example, if they came to pick you up at the soccer game, it wasn't just one parent. It was the whole family. It was the mother, my dad, my grandmother, my brothers. They would just fill the car up and all come out. And I still, to this day, like in the book, I say, I think maybe they thought that there might be another revolution between the time they leave the house to come to the soccer field. So they just all got in the car in case there was a revolution. We could all just keep going.
We may need to pick up and move somewhere else very, yeah, very quickly. Now, speaking of revolutions, we've heard a little bit in the last few years about the Green Revolution in Iran. Well, I guess we really haven't heard much about it recently, but when it happened a few years ago as part of the so-called Arab Spring, Iran was in the news and people there seemed to be looking forward to having a better, freer life. Have you been back, and has any of that really actually happened?
Well, yeah, actually, the Green Movement preceded the Arab Spring, because that was in 2009 after the elections, and then the Arab Spring happened, I think, 2011. A lot of people within Iran and outside of Iran were very hopeful that there might be a change in leadership. I think that one of the biggest issues is that there's a lot of there's not as many freedoms as that country requires. There's a lot of young people there who don't have as many opportunities, and I think that this generation wants a change. It's just very hard to do it when the leadership controls the military. I myself have not gone back. I haven't been back in over, I don't know, 16, 17 years since I started doing stand-up, because in some of my jokes, I've done jokes about the leadership. So, you know, I don't want to show up and have a guy at the airport waiting, going like, "Where have you been? We've been waiting for you." you have one show, last show ever.
Yeah.
So, no, I have not tested it to go back. And I tell people here all the time, the people of Iran are really, I think they're very advanced, they're very smart. With the internet, a lot of people know a lot of things that's going on in the world. It's just that the government right now is oppressive. That said, I've heard and seen a lot of Americans travel over there, and they're treated very well. Anthony Bourdain recently did one of those Parts Unknowns over there, and he said everything was great. So I think you can still go. It's just that I personally can't, because I've actually done jokes about the leadership.
Yeah, you have done a lot of material in a lot of places around the world. You, a few years ago, did the Axis of Evil comedy tour with Dean Obadalla, who's been on the show with me before, and a couple of other comics were part of it. And it went so well here in the U.S. that you actually took it to several places in the Middle East. What's the reception like for you and the other guys when you go there?
You know, it's pretty amazing. If you would have asked me when we premiered on Comedy Central in 2007 with the Axis of Evil comedy tour, and if you would have asked me back then, hey, where do you think you'll be performing outside the U.S., within a year, I would have told you England, Canada, Australia, all the English-speaking countries. Well, 6 months after we came out on Comedy Central, we get a call from some guys out of Jordan, and they say, yes, we would like for you to come to your shows here in Jordan. And I was like, bro, I'd love to, but the shows are in English. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm speaking English to you right now, you idiot. And it was a wake-up call. I was like, oh, my God, they speak English over there. And I realized, so the rest of the world knows a lot more about America than America seems to know about the rest of the world. And you go over there, it's amazing, again, with the internet, you can go to Saudi Arabia and do a joke about Lindsay Lohan, and they'll be like, oh, that Lindsay, she's so crazy, always in the rehab. You know, they know who Lindsay Lohan is. Like, they know our culture.
Yeah.
So it really translates very well. The main things that you run into over there, when you do shows, a lot of times the promoters say, listen, stay away from sex, religion, and politics. And so at first we were like, okay, well then, hello and good night. You know, but then you quickly realize that when they say sex, it's because the shows that they do there, it's not, there's not as many comedy shows there. Whereas, you know, here you might go to a comedy club six nights a week, seven nights a week. You can go. Over there, they do these big shows once in a while. So when they do them, people bring their kids. So it's kind of like keep it clean, almost TV friendly. When they say religion, they're just very sensitive about any religious topics. And it's not all of them, but there's going to be people that are going to be sensitive about it. And then when they say politics, they just mean local politics. So you could be in, Saudi Arabia and do a joke about, the president of Lebanon or something, and they don't care.
Uh-huh.
But you can't make fun of the king of Saudi Arabia in Saudi Arabia. That's a big no-no.
Yeah. It's funny because we would never have any blowback in this country for anybody doing jokes about politics or religion. That would never happen in the United States of America, of course.
Of course not. Of course. Yeah. It's actually funny to me when that whole Charlie Hebdo thing happened recently and people were saying, well, why can't Muslims take a joke about the Prophet Muhammad? Why are they so sensitive? I said, first of all, I personally, as a comedian, am for freedom of speech, and I think anyone should make any jokes that they want.
Yep.
And ultimately, a comedian or an artist has to survive or not survive in economically in the world by doing certain jokes. So if you do a joke that's really off color and a lot of people don't like it, then maybe that'll affect your shows and people won't come to them. But I think that's okay. But what was interesting to me was people were criticizing Muslims for being so sensitive. And then I go, you know how many times, like during the Iraq war, I was still doing jokes about President Bush. And there was a handful of times where in the middle of my show, somebody would yell from the audience, hey, you can't make fun of our commander-in-chief during a time of war.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa. I was like, that's the whole point of this country. I go, that was one of the pretenses of why we went into Iraq, was to bring democracy
right.
to Iraq. And now you're telling me I can't practice democracy in this country.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell people, I go, if you want to see how sensitive people are in America, do a tweet about gun control and see how how much vitriol you get.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me. I work in talk radio.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So if I were with you on the tour of the Middle East and we were both in the airport, is it likely that I would be pulled aside for a random security check?
In the Middle East? I wish it were that easy. No, unfortunately, you know, it's funny. You just brought up an idea I had. I wanted to do a sketch because, you know, the news we get right now, ultimately, one of the reasons I don't want to do terrorist parts is because when we see the news, 9 times out of 10, about the Middle East is negative. A lot of times it's ISIS, ISIS, ISIS. You would think that every Middle Eastern or every Muslim is a member of ISIS.
Yep.
And yet there's such a small group, such a small minority. And so I wanted to do a sketch where, you're in the Middle East, you're on an airplane, and you see the news, and it's talking about serial killers, serial killers, serial killers. And then, these Arabs are all on the plane, and a white guy comes on, and they all start freaking out because they think that he's a serial killer.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got to be like, whoa, I'm not a serial killer. Take it easy. But it's exactly what you said. It's the profiling is an interesting thing. And I don't know if they do reverse profiling over there. Matter of fact, I think it's kind of interesting. I've said this before. If you go to the airport in Dubai, you would see a lot of people in Muslim gear, the turban and the dishdasha and all that. And they're just, you know, that's just the clothes they wear. They're accountants, they're lawyers, they're whatever.
Yep.
They're just regular people.
Yep.
And if all you did was watch 24/7 Fox News and then go there and open your eyes, I think you'd freak out. You would think that you're in the middle of some place, you're about to get kidnapped. And yet these people are just living their lives. That's the way they dress.
Unlikely that a lot of those viewers are even going to leave the country at any time, which is part of the problem.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The book is called I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Played One on TV, Memoirs of a Middle Eastern Funny Man. Maz Jobrani, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Appreciate it.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.